glowed with different colors from the spheres being used to light them. The darkness of the huge space made them seem to hover in the air. This alcove had a long, curving stone desk joined directly into the rim of the balcony. There was a single chair and a goblet-like crystal bowl. Shallan nodded in thanks to the servant, who withdrew. Then she pulled out a handful of spheres and dropped them into the bowl, lighting the alcove. She sat down in the chair and laid her satchel on the desk. She undid the laces on her satchel, busying herself as she tried to think of something, anything, that would persuade Yasna.
First, I need to clear my mind.
From her satchel, she removed a sheaf of thick drawing paper, a set of charcoal pencils of different widths, some brushes and steel pens, ink and watercolors. Finally, she took out her smaller notebook, bound in codex form, which contained the nature sketches she'd done during her weeks aboard the Wind's Pleasure. These were simple things, really, but worth more to her than a chest full of spheres. She took a sheet off the stack, then selected a fine pointed charcoal pencil, rolling it between her fingers. She closed her eyes and fixed an image in her mind. Carbranth, as she'd memorized it in that moment soon after landing on the docks. Waves surging against the wooden posts, a salty scent to the air. Men climbing rigging, calling to one another with excitement. And the city itself, rising up the hillside, homes stacked atop homes, not a speck of land wasted, bells distant, tinkling softly in the air. She opened her eyes and began to draw. Her fingers moved on their own, sketching broad lines first. The crack-like valley the city was situated in, the port. Here, squares to be homes. There, a slash to mark a switchback of the grand roadway that led up to the conclave. Slowly, bit by bit, she added detail. Shadows as windows, lines to fill out the roadways, hints of people and carts to show the chaos of the thoroughfares. She had read of how sculptors worked. Many would take a blank stone block and work it into a vague shape first. Then they'd work it over again, carving more detail with each pass. It was the same for her in drawing. Broad lines first, then some details, then more, then down to the finest of lines. She had no formal training in pencils. She simply did what felt right. The city took shape beneath her fingers. She coaxed it free, line by line, scratch by scratch.
What would I do without this?
Tension bled from her body, as if released from her fingertips into the pencil. She lost track of time as she worked. Sometimes she felt like she was entering a trance, everything else fading. Her fingers almost seemed to draw of their own accord. It was so much easier to think while drawing. Before too long, she had copied her memory onto the page. She held up the sheet satisfied, relaxed, her mind clear. The memorized image of Carbranth was gone from her head. She'd released it into her sketch. There was a sense of relaxation to that, too, as if her mind was put under tension holding memories until they could be used. She did Yob next, standing shirtless in his vest and gesturing to the short porter who had pulled her up to the conclave. She smiled as she worked, remembering Yob's affable voice. He'd likely returned to the Wind's Pleasure by now.
Has it been 2 hours? Probably.
She was always more excited by drawing animals and people than she was by drawing things. There was something energizing about putting a living creature onto the page. A city was lines and boxes, but a person was circles and curves. Could she get that smirk on Yob's face right? Could she show his lazy contentedness, the way he would flirt with a woman far above his station? And the porter, with his thin fingers and sandaled feet, his long coat and baggy pants, his strange language, his keen eyes, his plan to increase his tip by offering not just a ride, but a tour. When she drew, she didn't feel as if she worked with only charcoal and paper. In drawing a portrait, her medium was the soul itself. There were plants from which one could remove a tiny cutting, a leaf or a bit of stem, then plant it and grow a duplicate. When she collected a memory of a person, she was snipping free a bud of their soul, and she cultivated and grew it on the page. Charcoal for sinew, paper pulp for bone, ink for blood, the paper's texture for skin. Creation Spren began to gather around her pad, looking at her work. Like other Spren, they were said to always be around, but usually invisible. Sometimes you attracted them, sometimes you didn't. With drawing, skill seemed to make a difference. Creation Spren were of medium size, as tall as one of her fingers, and they glowed with a faint silvery light. They transformed perpetually, taking new shapes. Usually, the shapes were things they had seen recently. An urn, a person, a table, a wheel, a nail. Always of the same silvery color, always the same diminutive height. They imitated shapes exactly, but moved them in strange ways. A table would roll like a wheel, an urn would shatter and repair itself. Her drawing gathered about a half dozen of them, pulling them by her act of creation, just as a bright fire would draw flame spren. She'd learned to ignore them. They weren't substantial. If she moved her arm through one, its figure would smear like scattered sand, then reform. She never felt a thing when touching one. Eventually, she held up the page, satisfied. It depicted Yob and the porter in detail, with hints of the busy city behind. She'd gotten their eyes right. That was the most important. Each of the 10 essences had an analogous part of the human body. Blood for liquid, hair for wood, and so forth. The eyes were associated with crystal and glass, the windows into a person's mind and spirit. She set the page aside. Some men collected trophies, others collected weapons or shields. Many collected spheres. Shallan collected people. People and interesting creatures. Perhaps it was because she'd spent so much of her youth in a virtual prison. She'd developed the habit of memorizing faces, then drawing them later, after her father had discovered her sketching the gardens. His daughter? Drawing pictures of dark eyes? He'd be furious with her. One of the infrequent times he'd directed his infamous temper at his daughter. After that, she'd done drawings of people only when in private, instead using her open drawing times to sketch the insects, crustaceans, and plants of the manor gardens. Her father hadn't minded this. Zoology and botany were proper feminine pursuits, and had encouraged her to choose natural history as her calling. She took out a third blank sheet. It seemed to beg her to fill it. A blank page was nothing but potential, pointless until it was used. Like a fully infused sphere cloistered inside a pouch, prevented from making its light useful.
Fill me.
The creation spren gathered around the page. They were still, as if curious, anticipatory. Shallan closed her eyes and imagined Yasna Kolin standing before the blocked door, the soulcaster glowing on her hand, the hallway hushed. Attendants, holding their breath, an anxious king, a still reverence. Shallan opened her eyes and began to draw with vigor, intentionally losing herself. The less she was in the now and the more she was in the then, the better the sketch would be. The other two pictures had been warm-ups. This was the day's masterpiece. With the paper bound onto the board, safe hand holding that, her free hand flew across the page, occasionally switching to other pencils. Soft charcoal for deep, thick blackness, like Yasna's beautiful hair. Hard charcoal for light grays, like the powerful waves of light coming from the soulcaster's gems. For a few extended moments, Shallan was back in that hallway again, watching something that should not be. A heretic wielding one of the most sacred powers in all the world. The power of change itself, the power by which the Almighty had created Roshar. He had another name, allowed to pass only the lips of Ardents. Elethanathile, he who transforms. Shallan could smell the musty hallway. She could feel her own heart beating in anticipation. The boulder would soon change, sucking away the stormlight in Yasna's gemstone. It would give up its essence, becoming something new. And then the memory faded, returning her to the quiet, dim alcove. The page now held a perfect rendition of the scene, worked in blacks and grays. The princess's proud figure regarded the fallen stone, demanding that it give way before her will. It was her. Shallan knew, with the intuitive certainty of an artist, that this was one of the finest pieces she had ever done. In a very small way, she had captured Yasna Kerlin, something the devotees had never managed. That gave her a euphoric thrill. Even if this woman rejected Shallan again, one fact would not change. Yasna Kerlin had joined Shallan's collection. Shallan wiped her fingers on her cleaning cloth, then lifted the paper. She noted absently that she'd attracted some 24 creation spren now. She would have to lacquer the page with ply tree sap to set the charcoal and protect it from smudges. She had some in her satchel. First, she wanted to study the page and the figure it contained.
Who is Yasna Kerlin?
Not one to be cowed, certainly. She was a woman to the bone, master of the feminine arts, but not by any means delicate. Such a woman would appreciate Shallan's determination. She would listen to another request for wardship, assuming it was presented properly. Yasna was also a rationalist, a woman with the audacity to deny the existence of the Almighty himself based on her own reasoning. Yasna would appreciate strength, but only if it was shaped by logic. Shallan nodded to herself, taking out a fourth sheet of paper and a fine-tipped brush pen, then shaking and opening her jar of ink. Yasna had demanded proof of Shallan's logic and writing skills.
Well, what better way to do that than to supplicate the woman with words?
Brightness, Yasna Kerlin.
Shallan painted the letters as neatly and beautifully as she could. She could have used a reed instead, but a brush pen was for works of art. She intended this page to be just that.
You have rejected my petition. I accept that. Yet, as anyone trained in formal inquiry knows, no supposition should be treated as axiomatic.
The actual argument usually read, no supposition, save for the existence of the Almighty himself, should be held as axiomatic. But this wording would appeal to Yasna.
A scientist must be willing to change her theories if experiment disproves them. I hold to the hope that you treat decisions in a like manner, as preliminary results pending further information. From our brief interaction, I can see that you appreciate tenacity. You complimented me on continuing to seek you out. Therefore, I presume that you will not find this letter a breach of good taste. Take it as proof of my ardor to be your ward, and not as disdain for your expressed decision.
Shallan raised the end of her brush pen to her lips as she considered her next step. The creation spren slowly faded away, vanishing. There were said to be logic spren, in the form of tiny storm clouds, who were attracted to great arguments, but Shallan had never seen them.
You expect proof of my worthiness. I wish I could demonstrate that my schooling is more complete than our interview revealed. Unfortunately, I haven't the grounds for such an argument. I have weaknesses in my understanding that is plain and not subject to reasonable dispute. But the lives of men and women are more than logical puzzles. The context of their experiences is invaluable in making good decisions. My study in logic does not rise to your standards, but even I know that rationalists have a rule. One cannot apply logic as an absolute where human beings are concerned. We are not beings of thought only. Therefore, the soul of my argument here is to give perspective on my ignorance, not by way of excuse, but of explanation. You express displeasure that one such as I should be trained so inadequately. What of my stepmother? What of my tutors? Why was my education handled so poorly? The facts are embarrassing. I have had few tutors and virtually no education. My stepmother tried, but she had no education herself. It is a carefully guarded secret, but many of the rural Vaden houses ignore the proper training of their women. I had three different tutors when I was very young, but each left after a few months, citing my father's temper or rudeness as her reason. I was left to my own devices in education. I have learned what I could through reading, filling in the gaps by taking advantage of my own curious nature. But I will not be capable of matching knowledge with someone who has been given the benefit of a formal and expensive education. Why is this an argument that you should accept me? Because everything I have learned has come by way of great personal struggle. What others were handed, I had to hunt. I believe that because of this, my education, limited though it is, has extra worth and merit. I respect your decisions, but I do ask you to reconsider. Which would you rather have? A ward who is able to repeat the correct answers because an overpriced tutor drilled them into her? Or a ward who had to struggle and fight for everything she has learned? I assure you that one of those two will prize your teachings far more than the other.
She raised her brush. Her argument seemed imperfect now that she considered them.
I expose my ignorance and expect Yasna to welcome me?
Still, it seemed the right thing to do. For all the fact that this letter was a lie built of truths, she hadn't truly come to partake of Yasna's knowledge. She had come as a thief. That made her conscience itch, and she nearly reached out and crumpled the page. Shallan heard the steps and leaped to her feet, spinning, safe hand held to her breast. She fumbled for words to explain her presence to Yasna Kolin. Light and shadows flickered in the hallway. Then a figure hesitantly looked into the alcove, a single white sphere cupped in one hand for light. It was not Yasna. It was a man in his early 20s, wearing simple gray robes.
An ardent.
Shallan relaxed. The young man noticed her. His face was narrow, his blue eyes keen. His beard was trimmed short and square, his head shaved.
Ah, excuse me, Brightness. I thought this was the alcove of Yasna Kolin.
It is.
Oh, you're waiting for her too?
Yes.
Would you mind terribly if I waited with you?
Of course not, Ardent.
She nodded her head in respect, then gathered up her things in haste, preparing the seat for him.
I can't take your seat, Brightness. I'll fetch another for myself.
She raised a hand in protest, but he had already retreated. He returned a few moments later, carrying a chair from another alcove. He was tall and lean, and she decided, with slight discomfort, rather handsome. Her father had owned only three Ardents, all elderly men. They had traveled his lands and visited the villages, ministering to the people, helping them reach points in their glories and callings. She had their faces in her collection of portraits. The Ardent set down his chair. He hesitated before sitting, glancing at the table.
My, my.
For a moment, Shallan thought he was reading her letter, and she felt an irrational surge of panic. The Ardent, however, was regarding the three drawings that lay at the head of the table, awaiting lacquer.
You did these, Brightness?
Yes, Ardent.
She lowered her eyes.
No need to be so formal. Please, I am Brother Capsul, or just Capsul. Really, it's fine. And you are?
Shallan Devar.
By Vedelaidev's golden keys, Brightness. Did Yasna Kolin teach you this skill with the pencil?
No, Ardent.
Still so formal. Tell me, am I so intimidating as that?
I have been brought up to show respect to Ardents.
Well, I myself find that respect is like manure. Use it where needed and growth will flourish. Spread it on too thick and things just start to smell.
Had the Ardent, a servant of the Almighty, just spoken of manure?
An Ardent is a representative of the Almighty himself. To show you lack of respect would be to show it to the Almighty.
I see. And this is how you'd respond if the Almighty himself appeared to you here? All of this formality and bowing?
Well, no.
Ah, and how would you react?
I suspect with screams of pain, as it is written that the Almighty's glory is such that any who look upon him would immediately be burned to ash.
Wisely spoken indeed. Please do sit, though. You still appear conflicted. What must I do to put you at ease? Shall I step up onto this desk here and do a jig?
Shallan blinked in surprise.
No objection. Well, then...
He began to climb up on his chair.
No, please!
Are you certain?
Yes, please. I promise not to respect you any longer.
He hopped down and seated himself. He leaned closer to her as if conspiratorially.
The table jig threat almost always works. I've only ever had to go through with it once, due to a lost bet against Brother Lanin. the Master Ardent of our monastery, nearly keeled over in shock.
You're an Ardent. You're forbidden to have possessions. What did you bet?
2 deep breaths of a winter rose's fragrance, and the sunlight's warmth on your skin. We can be rather creative at times. Years spent marinating in a monastery can do that to a man. Now, you were about to explain to me where you learned such skill with a pencil.
Practice. I should suspect that is how everyone learns eventually.
Wise words again. I'm beginning to wonder which of us is the Ardent. But surely you had a master to teach you?
Dando's the Oil Sworn.
Ah, a true master of pencils, if ever there was one. Now, not that I doubt your word, Brightness, but I'm rather intrigued how Dando's Heraldon could have trained you in arts, as, last I checked, he's suffering rather a terminal and perpetual ailment, namely that of being dead, for 300 years.
My father had a book of his instruction.
You learned this from a book?
Yes.
I need to read more.
Shallan took a memory of him sitting there, admiration and perplexity blending on his face as he studied the picture, rubbing his bearded chin with one finger. He smiled pleasantly, setting down the picture.
You have lacquer?
I do.
She got it out of her satchel. It was contained in a bulb sprayer of the type often used for perfume. He accepted the small jar and twisted the cap on the front, then gave the bottle a shake and tested the lacquer on the back of his hand. He nodded in satisfaction and reached for the drawing.
A piece such as this should not be allowed to risk smudging.
I can lacquer it. No need to trouble yourself.
It is no trouble. It's an honor. Besides, I'm an Ardent. We don't know what to do with ourselves when we aren't busying about, doing things others could do for themselves. It is best just to humor me.
He began to apply the lacquer, dusting the page with careful puffs. She had trouble keeping herself from reaching to snatch the sketch away. Fortunately, his hands were careful, and the lacquer went on evenly. He'd obviously done this before.
You are from Yakived, I presume.
From the hair or from the accent?
From the way you treat Ardents. The Vaden Church is by far the most traditional. I have visited your lovely country on 2 occasions. While your food sits well in my stomach, the amount of bowing and scraping you show Ardents made me uncomfortable.
Perhaps you should have danced on a few tables.
I considered it, but my brother and sister Ardents from your country would likely have dropped dead of embarrassment. I would hate to have that on my conscience. The Almighty is not kind toward those who kill his priests.
I should think that killing in general would be frowned upon.
What does Brightness Yasna think of your skill?
I don't think she cares. She doesn't seem terribly appreciative of the visual arts.
So I have heard. It's one of her few faults, unfortunately.
Another being that little matter of her heresy?
Indeed. I must admit, I stepped in here expecting indifference, not deference. How did you come to be part of her entourage?
Shallan started, realizing for the first time that Brother Cabsal must have assumed her to be one of the Bright Lady Colin's attendants, perhaps a ward.
Bother.
Hmm?
It appears I've inadvertently misled you, Brother Cabsal. I'm not associated with Brightness Yasna. Not yet, anyway. I've been trying to get her to take me on as a ward.
Ah.
I'm sorry.
For what? You did nothing wrong.
He turned the picture for her to see. It was perfectly lacquered, without any smears.
If you would do me a favor, child.
Anything.
He raised an eyebrow at that.
Anything reasonable.
By whose reason?
Mine, I guess.
Pity. Then I will limit myself. If you would kindly let Brightness Yasna know that I called upon her.
She knows you?
What business does a Herdazian Ardent have with Yasna, a confirmed atheist?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I'd hope she's heard my name, though, since I've requested an audience with her several times.
You want to try to convert her, I presume?
She presents a unique challenge. I don't think I could live with myself if I didn't at least try to persuade her.
And we wouldn't want you to be unable to live with yourself, as the alternative harks back to your nasty habit of almost killing Ardents.
Exactly. Anyway, I think a personal message from you might help where written requests have been ignored.
I doubt that.
Well, if she refuses, it only means that I'll be back. That would mean, hopefully, that we shall meet each other again. So I look forward to it.
I as well. And I'm sorry again about the misunderstanding.
Brightness, please, don't take responsibility for my assumptions.
I should hesitate to take responsibility for you in any manner or regard, Brother Capsule. But I still feel bad.
It will pass. But I'll do my best to make you feel well again. Is there anything you're fond of, other than respecting artists and drawing amazing pictures, that is?
Jam.
He cocked his head.
I like it. You asked what I was fond of. Jam.
So it shall be.
Capsule rose and withdrew into the dark corridor, fishing in his robe pocket for his sphere to give him light. In moments, he was gone.
Why didn't he wait for Yasna to return himself?
Shallan shook her head, then lacquered her other two pictures. She had just finished letting them dry, packing them in her satchel, when she heard footsteps in the hallway. Shallan hurriedly gathered her things, leaving the letter on the desk, then stepped up to the side of the alcove to wait. Yasna Kolin entered a moment later, accompanied by a small group of servants. She did not look pleased.
Victory! We stand atop the mount. We scatter them before us. Their homes become our dens. Their lands are now our farms. And they shall burn, as we once did, in a place that is hollow and forlorn.
Collected on Ishishan, 1172, 18 seconds pre-death. Subject was a light-eyed spinster of the Eighth Dawn.
Shallan's fears were confirmed as Yasna looked straight at her, then lowered her safe hand to her side in a mark of frustration.
So, you are here.
The servants told you then.
You didn't think that they would leave someone in my alcove and not warn me.
Behind Yasna, a small group of parshmen hesitated in the hallway, each carrying an armload of books.
Brightness Kolin,
I have wasted enough time on you already. You will withdraw, Mr. Var. And I will not see you again during my time here. Am I understood?
Shallan's hopes crumbled. She shrank back. There was a gravity to Yasna Kolin. One did not disobey her. One need only look into those eyes to understand.
I'm sorry to have bothered you.
Shallan clutched her satchel and left with as much dignity as she could manage. She barely kept the tears of embarrassment and disappointment from her eyes as she hastened down the hallway, feeling like a complete fool. She reached the porter's shaft, though they had already returned below after bringing up Yasna. Shallan didn't pull the bell to summon them. Instead, she placed her back to the wall and sank down to the floor, knees up against her chest, satchel in her lap. She wrapped her arms around her legs, free hand clasping her safe hand through the fabric of her cuff. Angry people unsettled her. She couldn't help but think of her father in one of his tirades. Was she weak because confrontation unsettled her so? She felt that she was.
Foolish idiot girl! What made you think you could do this? You've only set foot off your family grounds a half a dozen times during your life. Idiot, idiot, idiot!
She had persuaded her brothers to trust her, to put hope in her ridiculous plan, and now, what had she done?
Wasted 6 months during which our enemies circled closer.
Brightness Devar?
Shallan looked up, realizing she'd been so wrapped in her misery that she hadn't seen the servant approach.
Brightness Kolin would like to speak with you.
The young man gestured back down the hallway.
To berate me further?
But a high lady like Yasna got what she wanted. Shallan forced herself to stop shaking, then stood. At least she'd been able to keep the tears away. She hadn't ruined her makeup. She followed the servant back to the lit alcove, satchel clutched before her like a shield on the battlefield. Yasna Kolin sat in the chair Shallan had been using, stacks of books on the table. Yasna was rubbing her forehead with her free hand. The soul caster rested against the back of her skin, the smokestone dark and cracked. Though Yasna looked fatigued, she sat with perfect posture, her fine silk dress covering her feet, her safe hand held across her lap. Yasna focused on Shallan, lowering her free hand.
I should not have treated you with such anger, Miss Devar. You were simply showing persistence, a trait I normally encourage. I've often been guilty of stubbornness myself. Sometimes we find it hardest to accept in others that which we cling to in ourselves. My only excuse can be that I have put myself under an unusual amount of strain lately.
Shallan nodded in gratitude, though she felt terribly awkward. Yasna turned to look out of the balcony into the dark space of the Vale.
I know what people say of me. I should hope that I am not as harsh as some say, though a woman could have far worse than a reputation for sternness. It can serve one well.
Shallan had to forcibly keep herself from fidgeting. Should she withdraw? Yasna shook her head to herself, though Shallan could not guess what thoughts had caused the unconscious gesture. Finally, she turned back to Shallan and waved toward the large, goblet-like bowl on the desk. It held a dozen of Shallan's spheres. Shallan raised her free hand to her lips in shock. She'd completely forgotten the money. She bowed to Yasna in thanks, then hurriedly collected the spheres.
Rightness, lest I forget, I should mention that an ardent, Brother Cabsol, came to see you while I waited here. He wished me to pass on his desire to speak with you.
Not surprising. You seem surprised about the spheres, Miss Devar. I assumed that you were waiting outside to recover them. Is that not why you were so close?
No, Brightness. I was just settling my nerves.
Ah.
Brightness, what did you think of my letter?
Letter?
Beneath that stack of books, Brightness.
The servant quickly moved aside the stack of books. The parchman must have set it on the paper without noticing. Yasna picked up the letter, raising an eyebrow, and Shallan hurriedly undid her satchel and placed the spheres in her money pouch. Then she cursed herself for being so quick, as now she had nothing to do but stand and wait for Yasna to finish reading.
This is true. You are self-trained?
Yes, Brightness.
That is remarkable.
Thank you, Brightness.
And this letter was a clever maneuver. You correctly assumed that I would respond to a written plea. This shows me your skill with words, and the rhetoric of the letter gives proof that you can think logically and make a good argument.
Thank you, Brightness.
You should have left the note for me and withdrawn before I returned.
But then the note would have been lost beneath the stack of books.
Yasna raised an eyebrow at her, as if to show that she did not appreciate being corrected.
Very well. The context of a person's life is important. Your circumstances do not excuse your lack of education in history and philosophy, but leniency is in order. I will allow you to petition me again at a later date, a privilege I have never given any aspiring ward. Once you have a sufficient groundwork in those two subjects, come to me again. If you have improved suitably, I will accept you.
Shallan's emotions sank. Yasna's offer was kindly, but it would take years of study to accomplish what she asked. House Devar would have fallen by then, her family's lands divided among its creditors, her brothers and herself stripped of title and perhaps enslaved.
Thank you, Brightness.
Yasna nodded, as if considering the matter closed. Shallan withdrew, walking quietly down the hallway and pulling the cord to ring for the porters. Yasna had all but promised to accept her at a later date. For most, that would be a great victory. Being trained by Yasna Kolin, thought by some to be the finest living scholar, would have ensured a bright future. Shallan would have married extremely well, likely to the son of a high prince, and would have found new social circles open to her. Indeed, if Shallan had possessed the time to train under Yasna, the sheer prestige of a Kolin affiliation might have been enough to save her house. If only. Eventually, Shallan made her way out of the conclave. There were no gates on the front, just pillars set before the open maw. She was surprised to discover how dim it was outside. She trailed down the large steps, then took a smaller, more cultivated side path where she would be out of the way. Small shelves of ornamental shale bark had been growing along this walkway, and several species had let out fan-like tendrils to wave in the evening breeze. A few lazy lifespren, like specks of glowing green dust, flitted from one frond to the next. Shallan leaned back against the stone-like plant, the tendrils pulling in and hiding. From this vantage, she could look down on Carbranth, lights glowing beneath her like a cascade of fire streaming down the cliff face. The only other option for her and her brothers was to run, to abandon the family estate Senyar Kaved and seek asylum.
But where?
Were there old allies her father hadn't alienated? There was that matter of the strange collection of maps they'd found in his study.
What do they mean?
He'd rarely spoken of his plans to his children. Even her father's advisors knew very little. Helleran, her oldest brother, had known more, but he had vanished over a year ago, and her father had proclaimed him dead. As always, thinking of her father made her feel ill, and the pain started to constrict her chest. She raised her free hand to her head, suddenly overwhelmed by the weight of House Devar's situation, her part in it, and the secret she now carried, hidden 10 heartbeats away.
Oh, young miss!
She turned, shocked to see Yalb standing up on a rocky shelf a short distance from the conclave entrance. A group of men in guard uniforms sat on the rock around him.
Yalb?
He should have returned to his ship hours ago. She hurried over to stand below the short stone outcropping.
Why are you still here?
Oh, I found myself a game of cabers here with these fine, upstanding gentlemen of the city guard. Figured officers of the law were right unlikely to cheat me, so we entered into a friendly-type game while I waited.
But you didn't need to wait.
Didn't need to win 80 chips off these fellows, neither. But I did both.
The men sitting around him looked far less enthusiastic. Their uniforms were orange tabards tied about the middle with white sashes.
Well, I suppose I should be leading you back to the ship, then.
Yalb gathered up the spheres in the pile at his feet. They glowed with a variety of hues. The light was small. Each was only a chip, but it was impressive winnings. Shallan stepped back as Yalb hopped off the rock shelf. Yalb bowed to Shallan and led her away down the path. He had a twinkle to his eyes.
Stormfather, but it's fun to win against lawmen. I'll have free drinks at the docks once this gets around.
You shouldn't gamble. You shouldn't try to guess the future. I didn't give you that sphere so you could waste it on such practices.
It ain't gambling if you know you're going to win, young miss.
You cheated?
Shallan glanced back at the guardsmen, who had settled down to continue their game, lit by the spheres on the stones before them.
Not so loud! Cheating four guardsmen, now that's a trick. Hardly believe I managed it.
I'm disappointed in you. This is not proper behavior.
It is if you're a sailor, young miss. It's what they right expected from me. Watch me like handlers of poisonous sky eels they did. The game wasn't about the cards. It was about them trying to figure out how I was cheating and me trying to figure out how to keep them from hauling me off. I think I might not have managed to walk away with my skin if you hadn't arrived.
That didn't seem to worry him much. The roadway down to the docks was not nearly as busy as it had been earlier, but there was still a surprisingly large number of people about. The street was lit by oil lanterns. Spheres would just have ended up in someone's pouch, but many of the people about carried sphere lanterns, casting a rainbow of colored light on the roadway. The people were almost like spren, each a different hue, moving this way or that.
So, young miss, you really want to go back? I just said what I did so I could extract myself from that game there.
Yes, I do want to go back, please.
And your princess?
The meeting was unproductive.
She didn't take you? What's wrong with her?
Chronic competence, I should guess. She's been so successful in life, she has unrealistic expectations of others.
Yalb got a few steps ahead, turned, and walked backward, looking at her.
It doesn't make sense, young miss. What more could she want than you?
Much more, apparently.
But you're perfect, pardon my forwardness.
You're walking backward.
Pardon my backwardness, then. You look good from any side, young miss, that you do.
She found herself smiling. Tozbek's sailors had far too high an opinion of her.
You'd make an ideal ward. Genteel, pretty, refined and such. Not much like your opinion on gambling, but that's to be expected. Wouldn't be right for a proper woman not to scold a fellow for gambling. It'd be like the sun refusing to rise or the sea turning white.
Or Yasna Kolen smiling.
Exactly. Anyway, you're perfect.
It's kind of you to say so.
Well, it's true. So that's it. You're going to give up?
She gave him a perplexed stare. He stood there on the busy roadway, lit from above by a lantern burning yellow-orange, hands on his hips, white Thalen eyebrows drooping along the sides of his face, bare-chested under his open vest. That was a posture no citizen, no matter how high-ranked, had ever taken at her father's mansion.
I did try to persuade her. I went to her a second time, and she rejected me again.
Two times, eh? In cards, you always got to try a third hand. It wins the most often.
But that's not really true. The laws of probability and statistics...
Don't know much blustering math. But I do know the passions. You win when you need it most, you see.
The passions. Pagan superstition.
Of course. Yasna had referred to glyph wards as superstition, too. So perhaps it all came down to perspective.
Try a third time.
Shallan shivered to consider Yasna's wrath if Shallan bothered her yet again. She'd surely withdraw the offer to come study with her in the future. But Shallan would never get to take that offer. It was like a glass sphere with no gemstone at the center. Pretty, but worthless. Was it not better to take one last chance at getting the position she needed now? It wouldn't work. Yasna had made it quite clear that Shallan was not yet educated enough.
Not yet educated enough.
An idea sparked in Shallan's head. She raised her safe hand to her breast, standing on that roadway, considering the audacity of it. She'd likely get herself thrown from the city at Yasna's demand. Yet if she returned home without trying every avenue, could she face her brothers? They depended on her. For once in her life, someone needed Shallan. That responsibility excited her and terrified her.
I need a book merchant.
Yob raised an eyebrow at her.
Third hand wins the most. Do you think you can find me a book merchant who is open at this hour?
Khabrant is a major port, young miss. Stores stay open late. Just wait here.
Yob dashed off into the evening crowd, leaving her with an anxious protest on her lips. She seated herself in a demure posture on the stone base of a lantern pole. It should be safe. She saw other light-eyed women passing on the street, though they were often carried in palanquins or those small hand-pulled vehicles. She even saw the occasional real carriage, though only the very wealthy could afford to keep horses. A few minutes later, Yob popped out of the crowd as if from nowhere and waved for her to follow. She rose and hurried to him.
Should we get a porter?
No, it's right here.
He led her to a large side street that ran laterally across the city's hill. She stepped carefully. Her skirt was long enough that she worried about tearing the hem on the stone. The strip at the bottom was designed to be easily replaced, but Shallan could hardly afford to waste spheres on such things. Yob pointed along another cross street. This one had a row of shops climbing up the steep slope, each with a sign hanging out front bearing the glyph pair for book, and those glyphs were often styled into the shape of a book. Illiterate servants who might be sent to a shop had to be able to recognize them.
Merchants of the same type like to clump together. Seems dumb to me, but I guess merchants are like fish. Where you find one, you'll find others.
The same could be said of ideas.
Shallan counted six different shops. All were lit with stormlight in the windows, cool and even.
Third one on the left. Merchant's name is Artmern. My sources say he's the best.
It was a Thalen name. Likely, Yob had asked others from his homeland, and they had pointed him here. She nodded to Yob, and they climbed up the steep stone street to the shop. Yob didn't enter with her. She'd noticed that many men were uncomfortable around books and reading, even those who weren't Vorin. She pushed through the door, stout wood set with two crystal panels, and stepped into a warm room, uncertain what to expect. She'd never gone into a store to purchase anything. She'd either sent servants or the merchants had come to her. The room inside looked very inviting, with large, comfortable, easy chairs beside a hearth. Flamespren danced on burning logs there, and the floor was wood. Seamless wood. It had probably been soul cast that way directly from the stone beneath.
Lavish indeed.
A woman stood behind a counter at the back of the room. She wore an embroidered skirt and blouse rather than the sleek, silk one-piece hava that Shallan wore. She was dark-eyed, but she was obviously affluent. In Vorin kingdoms, she'd likely be of the first or second Nan. Thalens had their own system of ranks. At least they weren't completely pagan. They respected eye color, and the woman wore a glove on her safe hand. There weren't many books in the place. A few on the counter, one on a stand beside the chairs. This looked more like a person's home than a shop. The woman slid a marker into her book, smiling at Shallan. It was a smooth, eager smile, almost predatory.
"Please, Brightness, sit."
She waved toward the chairs. The woman had curled her long, white Thalen eyebrows, so they hung down the sides of her face like locks from her bangs. Shallan sat hesitantly as the woman picked up a small bell. Soon, a portly man waddled into the room, wearing a vest that seemed ready to burst from the stress of holding in his girth. His hair was graying, and he kept his eyebrows combed back over his ears.
"Ah, dear young woman, are you in the market for a nice novel? Some leisure reading to pass the cruel hours while you are separated from a lost love? Or perhaps a book on geography with details of exotic locations?"
No, thank you. I need an extensive set of books on history and three on philosophy. Something by Placini, Gabrithin, Eustera, Manaline, or Shauka daughter Haswith.
Oh, heavy reading for one so young.
The man nodded to the woman, who was probably his wife. She ducked into the back room. He'd use her for reading, even if he could read himself. He wouldn't want to offend customers by doing so in their presence. He would handle the money. Commerce was a masculine art in most situations.
"Now why is a young flower like yourself bothering herself with such topics? Can't I interest you in a nice romantic novel? They are my specialty, you see. Young women from across the city come to me, and I always carry the best."
"A romantic novel? Yes, perhaps that would be nice. Do you by chance have a copy of Nearer the Flame?"
The merchant blinked. Nearer the Flame was written from the viewpoint of a man who slowly descended into madness after watching his children starve.
"Are you certain you want something so ambitious?"
"Is ambition such an unseemly attribute in a young woman?"
"Well, no, I suppose not. I can see you are a woman of discriminating taste."
"I am. I do like my meals prepared very carefully, as my palate is quite delicate."
"Pardon? I meant that you have discriminating taste in books."
"I've never eaten one, actually."
"Brightness, I believe you are having sport with me."
"Not yet, I'm not. I haven't even really begun." Now, you were right to compare the mind and the stomach.
But
too many of us take great pains with what we ingest through our mouths and far less with what we partake of through our ears and eyes, wouldn't you say?"
He nodded, perhaps not trusting her to let him speak without interrupting. Shallan knew, somewhere in the back of her mind, that she was letting herself go too far, that she was tense and frustrated after her interactions with Yasna. She didn't care at the moment.
"Discriminating. I'm not certain I agree with your choice of words. To discriminate is to maintain prejudice against, to be exclusive. Can a person afford to be exclusive with what they ingest, whether we speak of food or of thoughts?"
"I think they must be. Isn't that what you just said?"
"I said we should take thought for what we read or eat, not that we should be exclusive. Tell me, what do you think would happen to a person who ate only sweets?"
"Oh, I know well. I have a sister-in-law who periodically upsets her stomach by doing that."
"See? She was too discriminating. The body needs many different foods to remain healthy, and the mind needs many different ideas to remain sharp. Wouldn't you agree? And so if I were to read only these silly romances you presume that my ambition can handle, my mind would grow sick as surely as your sister-in-law's stomach. Yes, I should think that the metaphor is a solid one. You are quite clever, Master Artmern."
His smile returned.
"Of course, being talked down to upsets both the mind and the stomach. So nice of you to give a poignant object lesson to accompany your brilliant metaphor. Do you treat all of your customers this way?"
"Brightness, I believe you stray into sarcasm."
"Funny. I thought I'd run straight into it, screaming at the top of my lungs."
"I'll go help my wife."
She sat back and realized she was annoyed at herself for letting her frustrations boil out. It was just what her nurses had warned her about. A young woman had to mind her words. Her father's intemperate tongue had earned their house a regrettable reputation. Would she add to it? She calmed herself, enjoying the warmth and watching the dancing flame spren until the merchant and his wife returned, bearing several stacks of books. The merchant took a seat, and his wife pulled over a stool, setting the tomes on the floor, and then showing them one at a time as her husband spoke.
For history, we have two choices. Times and Passage by Rencoult is a single-volume survey of Rosharan history since the Hierocracy.
His wife held up a red cloth-bound volume.
I told my wife that you would likely be insulted by such a shallow option, but she insisted.
Thank you. I am not insulted, but I do require something more detailed.
Oh, then perhaps Edenathis will serve you.
His wife held up a blue-gray set of four volumes.
It is a philosophical work which examines the same time period by focusing only on the interactions of the five Voren kingdoms. As you can see, the treatment is exhaustive.
The four volumes were thick.
The five Voren kingdoms?
She thought there were four. Yakaved, Alethkar, Kabranth, and Natanatin. United by religion, they had been strong allies during the years following the recreants. The volumes intrigued her.
I will take them.
Excellent. Of the philosophical works you listed, we didn't have anything by Eustera. We have one each of works by Plosini and Madeline. Both are collections of excerpts from their most famous writings. I have had the Plosini book read to me. It's quite good.
Shallan nodded.
As for Gabrathin, we have four different volumes. My, but he was a prolific one. Oh, and we have a single book by Shauka daughter Hadswith.
The wife held up a thin green volume.
I have to admit I have never had any of her work read to me. I didn't realize that there were any Shin philosophers of note.
Shallan looked at the four books by Gabrathin. She had no idea which one she should take, so she avoided the question, pointing at the two collections he had mentioned first and the single volume by Shauka daughter Hazwith. A philosopher from distant Shin, where people lived in mud and worshipped rocks? The man who had killed Yasna's father nearly 6 years before, prompting the war against the Parshendi and Natin-Natin, had been Shin. The assassin in white, they called him.
I will take those three, along with the histories.
Excellent! For buying so many, I will give you a fair discount. Let us say, 10 emerald brooms.
Shallan nearly choked. An emerald broom was the largest denomination of sphere, with 1,000 diamond chips. 10 of them was more than her trip to Kabranth had cost by several magnitudes. She opened her satchel, looking in at her money pouch. She had around 8 emerald brooms left. She'd have to take fewer of the books, obviously. But which ones? Shallan was surprised to see Yalb standing in the door, holding his cap in his hands, nervous. He rushed to her chair, going down on one knee. She was too stunned to say anything.
Why is he so worried?
Brightness, my master bids you return. He's reconsidered his offer. Truly, we can take the price you offered.
Shallan opened her mouth, but found herself stupefied. Yalb glanced at the merchant.
Brightness, don't buy from this man. He's a liar and a cheat. My master will sell you much finer books at a better price.
Now what is this? How dare you? Who is your master?
Bormest.
That rat? He sends a boy into my shop trying to steal my customer. Outrageous.
She came to our shop first.
Stormfather. He's quite the actor.
Shallan finally recovered her wits.
You had your chance. Run along and tell your master that I refuse to be swindled. I will visit every bookshop in the city if that is what it takes to find someone reasonable.
Artmern isn't reasonable.
We shall see.
Brightness, surely you do not believe these allegations.
And how much were you going to charge her?
10 emerald brooms for those 7 books.
And you didn't stand up and walk right out? You practically had my master's ears and he offered you a better deal than that. Please, Brightness, return with me. We are ready to...
10 was just an opening figure. I did not expect her to take them. Of course, 8...
I'm sure we have those same books, Brightness. I'll bet my master gives them to you for 2.
Brightness? Surely you would not patronize someone so crass as to send a servant into someone else's shop to steal his customers.
Perhaps I would, At least he didn't insult my intelligence.
Hartman's wife glared at her husband, and the man grew even more red in the face.
2 emerald, 3 sapphire, that is as low as I can go. If you want cheaper than that, then buy from the scoundrel Bahamist. The books will probably be missing pages, though.
Shallan hesitated, glancing at Yob. He was caught up in his role, bowing and scraping. She caught his eyes, and he just kind of gave a shrug.
I'll do it.
No.
He slunk away. Shallan rose and counted out the spheres, the emerald brome she retrieved from her safe pouch. Soon, she walked from the shop, bearing a heavy canvas bag. She walked down the steep street and found Yob lounging beside a lamppost. She smiled as he took the bag from her.
How did you know what a fair price for a book was?
Fair price for a book? I've no idea. I just figured he'd be trying to take you for as much as he could. That's why I asked around for who his biggest rival was and came back to help get him to be more reasonable.
It was that obvious I'd let myself be swindled?
Just a little. Anyway, cunning men like him is almost as much fun as cheating guards. You probably could have gotten him down further by actually leaving with me, then coming back later to give him another chance.
That sounds complicated.
Merchants is like mercenaries, my gammer always said. Only difference is that merchants will take your head off, then pretend to be your friend all the same.
This is from a man who just spent the evening cheating a group of guards at cards?
Well, you have my thanks anyway.
Was it nothing? It was fun, though I can't believe you paid what you did. It's just a bunch of wood. I could find some driftwood and put some funny marks on it. Would you pay me pure spheres for that too?
I can't offer that.
She fished in her satchel. She took out the picture she'd drawn of Yob and the porter.
But please, take this, with my thanks.
Yob took the picture and stepped up beneath a nearby lantern to get a look.
Oh!
He cocked his head, smiling broadly.
Stormfather, ain't that something? Looks like I'm seeing myself in a polished plate, it does. I can't take this brightness.
Please, I insist.
She did, however, blink her eyes, taking a memory of him standing there, one hand on his chin as he studied the picture of himself. She'd redraw him later. After what he'd done for her, she dearly wanted him in her collection. Yob carefully tucked the picture between the pages of a book, then hefted the bag and continued. They stepped back onto the main roadway. Noman, the middle moon, had begun to rise, bathing the city in pale blue light. Staying up this late had been a rare privilege for her in her father's house, but these city people around them barely seemed to notice the late hour.
What a strange place the city is.
Back to the ship now?
No. Back to the conclave.
He raised an eyebrow, but led her back. Once there, she bid Yob farewell, reminding him to take his picture. He did so, wishing her luck before hastening from the conclave, probably worried about meeting the guardsmen he'd cheated earlier. Shallan had a servant carry her books and made her way down the hallway back to the Vale. Just inside the ornate iron doors, she caught the attention of a master servant.
Yes, Brightness?
Most of the alcoves were now dim, and patient servants were returning tomes to their safe place beyond crystal walls. Shaking off her fatigue, Shallan counted up the rows. There was still a light in Yasna's alcove.
I'd like to use the alcove there.
Do you have a chit of admittance?
I'm afraid not.
Then you'll have to rent the space if you wish to use it regularly. 2 sky marks.
Wincing at the price, Shallan dug out the proper spheres and paid. Her money pouches were looking depressingly flat. She let the parchment porters haul her up to the appropriate level, then she quietly walked to her alcove. There, she used all her remaining spheres to fill the oversized goblet lamp. To get enough light, she was forced to use spheres of all 9 colors and all 3 sizes, so the illumination was patchy and varied. Shallan peeked over the side of her alcove and out at the next balcony over. Yasna sat studying, heedless of the hour, her goblet filled to the brim with pure diamond bromes. They were best for light, but less useful in soul casting, so weren't as valuable. Shallan ducked back around. There was a place at the very edge of the alcove's table where she could sit hidden by the wall from Yasna, so she sat there. Perhaps she should have chosen an alcove on another level, but she wanted to keep an eye on the woman. Hopefully, Yasna would spend weeks here studying. enough time for Shallan to dedicate herself to some fierce cramming. Her ability to memorize pictures and scenes didn't work as well on text, but she could learn lists and facts at a rate that her tutors had found remarkable. She settled herself in the chair, pulling out the books and arranging them. She rubbed